More than just movies and theme parks, Disney invents a new touch-sensing technology, and speaking of touch, James Cameron, no longer happy with 3Ds, says he's going to go straight to 5Ds. And no, we're not talking about bras here, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, everybody, this is Steven.
And this is Chris.
And this is Kyle.
And you're listening to That Computer Show, your source for the latest in gaming and technology news. On today's episode 211, get it? Yeah, okay. Of That Computer Show, we ask the hard questions, like, will Windows 8's revolutionary move spell the beginning of the end for disc media? Or will it just piss a bunch of people off? And will anybody care about a Black Ops sequel in the future? And what will the title be? I'm guessing Call of Duty 8 Black Ops Not So Modern Warfare 4. That's going to be the official title.
That's a good guess.
Yeah. Elder Scrolls Online and a new line of smartphones starts to trickle down from across the pond. All that and more on today's That Computer Show episode 211. All righty, Chris. You know that Disney doesn't do just movies, right?
What do they do?
Oh, goodness.
Theme parks.
Oh, yeah, okay. I thought you were going another direction there.
What were you...
Have you seen some of their cover art?
Okay, yeah, they do have a penchant for the naughty. Disney Research invents a new touch-sensing technology. Didn't even really know that there was a Disney Research division. But basically, it's using a special wiring to pretty much give anything touch-sensing technology. So not just a touchscreen, but like... Well, I think what they call it is a novel swept frequency capacitive sensing technique.
That's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. Yeah, it's basically they apply voltage to and they detect a whole bunch of different frequencies and ranges of, you can detect motion that way.
Very, very cool.
So you can turn anything into a touch screen kind of a thing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So other devices like your refrigerator would know that you're touching it.
Yeah. Or... like, they can even make water touch-sensitive with this technology.
That is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's weird.
So, like, you could stick your hand in an aquarium, and it would be like, hey, man, you're touching me. I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you. Anyway, super cool. I don't know if this is really applicable for computing, but you can imagine you'll probably start seeing this kind of technology in, like, aquariums and theme parks and Disney World in the coming years.
Yeah.
So, also, movies. 3D movies are still, you know, they're fighting for popularity. Did Avengers come out in 3D?
It did. They were playing both 3D and non-3D versions.
What did you watch?
Normal version.
I didn't see it. I'm waiting. Emmy Jo Rockstar is going to come with a movie, but I've heard really good things about it. Kyle, you watched it, right?
Yeah, it's really good. I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, don't, because like listeners will murder face you.
Or they've already seen it and they're going to call in and spoil it.
No, don't get... Call in, please. By all means, call in, but please don't call in to spoil the movie.
I have a dump button, so we won't spoil it for everybody
else
listening.
Yeah, so Kyle will take a dump if you... wait, what? James Cameron, this... And, okay, James Cameron is kind of... He kind of was one of the pioneers for modern, current 3D movie technology. You remember Avatar?
No.
The blue people?
Who were they? Smurfs?
Was Smurfs released in 3D?
Yes.
It was?
Yes.
Oh, what a waste of 3D technology. So, he wants to adopt 5D content.
Okay, he's got to explain this, because it almost sounds like a razor blade commercial at this point.
Yeah, there's like five blades now when you go to the movies.
And really, ladies and gentlemen, you don't need more than three blades.
I have 12.
You don't need more than three dimensions, you know?
And you know what? Actually, and this is, I got to be honest, ladies and gentlemen, this is kind of a misleading story. He's not talking about, like, the Rumble technology or Smell-O-Vision.
Yeah, I almost thought, you know, if you could put some sort of, tactile sensation.
Yeah, which they tried that in the 50s. You know, they tried Smell-O-Vision. They tried, like, putting subwoofers in the seats or shocker buzzers in the seats to
that just
you know horror movies.
You.
Yeah, well, right. Well, okay. And what he's actually talking about is, and this does make sense. I have to side with him. It's simultaneously filming 3D and 2D. It's 5Ds. 3 + 2 is because what's happening right now is people are either filming it in 3D, or they're filming it in 2D and then post processing to make you throw up and simulate 3D.
And simulated 3D does not look good. You know, it's either just a CGI or you can really tell that image was stretched.
Right.
The film, having it filmed in 3D, gives you a very realistic, almost like you don't even realize that it's in 3D until you're like, oh yeah, it was really, really in depth there.
Right.
It didn't look like I was watching a screen. It looked like the screen was just sort of a viewport into this film.
Into the film, right. Tron Legacy is a really great example of good 3D. Here's a quote. The future of 3D is the broadcast, exclamation mark. And he actually does make a good point because, you know, we're not seeing a lot of 3D content broadcast right now. So 3D TVs are pretty much useless for 99% of the content out there. He says, we need to build an economic workflow by developing a range of complementary tools from A to Z. That's Chris's mouse. The concept is to link the 3D camera to the 2D cameras, the rig being enslaved to the 2D camera controls, so that basically you can film your 3D and 2D shots at the same time. So, yeah, you know, that makes a whole lot of sense, because that way, if I watch it in 3D or if I watch it in 2D, I know I'm getting the same production. I'm not getting some post-production trickery.
Right.
And they're putting about the same amount of effort into both. So, yeah, okay. I'll give you that.
But doesn't that double the cost of making films and television programs if you have...
Well, super good question, and I'm wondering if they can't just make one of the cameras... The 2D camera.
Yeah, the left eye, for example, of the 3D camera. So, because when you're shooting 3D, you're shooting a specific, depending on the depth that you want, a specific distance apart from the... you have two cameras, and they're spaced out. And yeah. Depending on the depth you want, you space them out and angle them in.
Now, what's even more exciting is Cameron is part of the Pace Cameron's group, the CPG, I don't know why. Their mission is to create a system where one technician can operate 28, 40, or even 100 cameras without any additional help. So basically you have a camera guy who's operating everything, so you don't... Let's say that your camera is not really good, you want to get the person's face from the other angle. Well, instead of filming from one set of cameras... You're actually getting it from pretty much any angle. It's kind of like setting up three or four Kinects. You know, you can recreate a room in 3D. So if let's just say I, as the viewer, want to change the camera angle in the movie, in the future I might be able to do that if they're doing cameras throughout the whole stage. Anyway, kind of cool. We'll see. You know, we'll see what happens with there, because I've noticed the 3D TVs have kind of dropped off in sales, right?
Yeah. It's a fad. What it was.
I mean, I love my 3D TV.
Yeah, it's really cool, but, I mean, Avatar kind of revitalized the whole fad, and then a whole bunch of movies started coming out in 3D. And
I mean, Hollywood really is pushing it. Like you said, Avengers was out in 3D.
Right.
Smurfs was out in 3D. The quintessential 3D experience, I'm sure. Smurfs and Alvin and the Chipmunks.
I mean, I didn't see Avengers in 3D, and I don't think it really would have lost anything if I had seen it in 3D or vice versa.
I'll probably see it in 3D, so I'll tell you.
Okay.
Like, you know, hey, man, this was awesome in 3D.
Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah. So, Chris, do you have anything hot and sexy to talk about?
Well, I was going to add to that, but...
Well, hit me, man. Literally, because I'm, you know, sensitive.
You know, there are a lot of people out there that are in the I hate 3D bandwagon. They're in that clique right now because they see it as a fad.
Yeah.
Both
or it hurts them.
Right.
Yeah, and that's another thing is you have people complaining about having to wear glasses. To see the content in 3D, and that gives them a headache. And my retort to that is, do you ever wear sunglasses? Because, you know, if you use a Vizio TV, for example, like the one we have at our store, and you have in your home, the passive style 3D, you're basically wearing a set of sunglasses, polarized lenses, and that are actually pretty darn comfortable.
Yeah.
I think the problem that people are having, though, is that the current 3D technology is built on a controlled short circuit of your visual cortex. It's tricking you into seeing this depth. And I read somewhere that that it's designed for the average width of human eyes. So if your eyes are set too close together or too far apart, I think that says something about your intelligence or like your genetic structure or whatever. But or if your vision is bad or really, really good. We have one of our gamers has better than 20/20 vision, and it gives him issues. So I think that a lot of the people having the problems, real problems, not people just, you know, complaining to complain. They're having those issues. But don't glassesless 3D make them puke as well?
I don't know. I haven't really seen the glassesless 3D work that well, because it does require that you are at a predetermined
very
angle
specific
to
viewing angle, yeah.
the display, which means you have a very narrow viewing angle. Where passive and active viewing technology like you use with glasses
right.
gives you more freedom for the viewing angle, mm-hmm. which translates to better comfort in your viewing
yeah,
period.
Yeah. Yeah, you can sit off to the left if you want. Now, and I have noticed, you mentioned the Vizio TV at the store. Some of the gamers who complain about 3D movies in theaters have watched 3D movies at the store and said, hey, man, it's a totally different experience. This doesn't make me want to puke. This doesn't give me a headache.
That, like you said, that has to do a lot probably with viewing distance. There's a lot
right.
lot less distance between you and the actual display, so that gives you...
Man, it makes me want to go watch Tron.
Yeah, that was a good film. But, you know, there was one commenter to this particular story was talking about how 3D, you know... One person complained that 3D doesn't really add depth to the story.
Right.
And then another commenter said, actually, it really does if it's not used in a gimmicky way where things are popping out of the screen.
Avatar is a really good example, and I've used the story. Well, continue. I'll tell you.
Because when you're viewing the world that this is in, this gentleman on one of the commenters, he said that he watches golf in 3D, and he says that it gives him a very relaxing experience because he can see the rolling hills. He can see the depth inside the display. And it's almost like he's there.
Right.
And it's a better experience just to watch a sports channel in 3D.
And there has been a lot of talk about
things
adding 3D to sports.
Things don't pop out of the screen. It's not, that is yeah. gimmicky. But you want to add depth to the other side of the panel. And everything that I've seen that incorporates 3D that goes in that direction tends to be easier for your brain to accept and process than things coming out at you. You know, like the 3DS, most of the stuff goes down into the display. So you're seeing through it. And it's a really comfortable experience.
Yeah, that's
after
a better.
A while.
Yeah, it is nice.
Remember Avatar when in the jungle scenes? When I was in the theater, people were swatting at bugs, and they were immersed in the experience, and they did a really good job with that 3D.
There were actually bugs in the theater.
There weren't. I took my glasses off, and like everybody was swatting at the same time. Listen, that's all for the first segment of That Computer Show, Bugless. Broadcasting live from WOIC. Call us at 803-748-9293. Maybe get us some Raid because we got a bug problem.
Raid!
Stay right there. Find out more. That Computer Show will be right back. And we are back with more of That Computer Show. You're listening to us live from thatcomputershow.net or tuning in to AM 1230 WOIC. Give us a call at 803-748-9293. Once again, that's 803-748-9293. And get in on the conversation. Got a couple cool things to talk about this segment. Chris has got some cool, ironic teleconferencing news thing happening. And actually, it's really relevant because my mom was trying to Skype from her smartphone yesterday, and it's kind of interesting and ironic how that's evolved. Also, got some 3D virtual teleconferencing news. And if you want an Xbox, I got one cheap for you, man. I'll give you one for $100.
Really?
Yeah. So what should we start with, Kyle? You pick.
Let's talk about the ironic teleconferencing news.
The ironic teleconferencing news. Take it away, Chris.
Well, we discussed this.
And that's all for our...
sure. We discussed this a while back ago when Microsoft bought Skype.
Yes.
And there was some concern that, you know, they might break it or...
Yeah, people were really freaked out it was going to, like...
Because remember what happened
Skype.
At Hotmail when they bought Hotmail?
Yeah, yeah.
Hotmail, for example, was hosted on a lot of BSD and Linux boxes. It was PHP-based, blah, 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 blah. It was this huge thing. Microsoft bought it, turned it to a .NET project on Windows, and just came crashing down. It was terrible.
It became, for a short period of time, it was the most exploited and most spammy email service in existence.
Skype was bought by Microsoft, and we've had a small amount of fear that would happen. However, Microsoft's done the exact opposite. It seems that they found a security problem with Skype, and... That could expose the local and remote IP address of users who are logged into the service. And in a way to deter that and also increase, like, the network's reliability, because they went from, 30 to 41 million people connected simultaneously to Skype.
Wow.
Was the peak this year. That's a lot of people talking to each other over VoIP. So what they've done is they've changed a little bit of the supernode network that works in Skype, and they've switched it to little over 10,000 computers running Linux. That's the thing that surprised me. Microsoft bought a product, and in order to make it better, they're using 10,000 Linux servers to bolster the network, to act as supernodes.
Now, they're using an aftermarket set of patches called GR Security, which is designed to make servers about as bulletproof as you can without just taking them off a network and disassembling them and then spreading their parts across the planet. That's really the only way to have a secure computer.
Yeah. Speaking of secure computer, do you want to let people know about that flash exploit?
Yeah, we'll get to that in a few minutes. Okay. I do want to talk about that. You know what else is interesting, though? And I'm super surprised at Microsoft's behavior with Skype. They didn't close the home office. They're not relocating them. They didn't fire anybody. Skype support on the Android has blossomed in the months since it was purchased. You can even get a Skype client for your Vizio NetApp-enabled TV. I think like the Samsung Net TVs will do it too, which is really cool, actually, because we're starting to see convergence. You know, we talk about convergence, which is kind of that beautiful melding of different technologies that actually makes life easier and cooler and not more of a pain in the tail. Being able to crank up your TV, open up Skype, and maybe enjoy a holiday meal with a family member across the country, well, that's possible now. Now all I need is my Back to the Future style rehydrated pizza and hoverboards, and I'm a happy camper, man. So, yeah, you want to talk about this flash thing? Let me find my little linky link. I got a couple of things. They got the Google Apps thing too. We might cover that in the next segment, but
yeah. You brought this to my attention, and I gave it a cursory glance. It appears that there's an emergency flash update. So this is your emergency breaking news segment
of the
show.
Do we have the emergency broadcast system thing? And what's crazy is there's a vulnerability in Flash, and it apparently exists in all versions of Flash.
On all platforms.
All platforms.
That means
Mac,
from the
PC, Linux, iOS,
Android phone,
Android, BOS.
But here's the interesting BOS.
Yeah, I remember. I liked B.
The interesting bit is the exploit in the wild that they've seen is a targeted attack against IE on Windows.
Yeah, it's currently the only wild attack is on IE Windows, the traditional, you know,
granted,
what you'd
the
think.
Exploit exists for all versions, so
right.
If you have Flash on your Mac, go ahead and update, run updates. Now, granted, here's the interesting bit on your Mac. You may have to wait for Apple to catch up.
Yeah.
Because all your updates are delivered by Apple on that. As far as I know, that should be in the works. You should get an update the next day or two. But if you're on Windows, go ahead and run a Windows update or go to Adobe's site and click Download Flash, and that will download your Flash installer for all your...
Yeah, because, you know, we're seeing the Flashback virus was based on an exploit that existed in Windows as well, but had been patched, I think, months prior. Now, once it did come to light that this was a viable viral infection and they had 600,000 or 700,000 infections, Apple moved pretty quickly to patch Java. So we're hoping that they're going to patch pretty quickly. Now, if you are on an Android phone, you need to get your update from the Google Play App Store. Just about everybody else can get them straight from the Adobe website.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is kind of a big breaking news sort of a thing.
But be careful what you download from the Google Play Store. It appears that there are a handful of titles in the Google Play Store that are infected with malicious software.
Yeah, we just talked about those 15 data-stealing apps that were pulled a few weeks ago.
In total, 17 malicious phone apps have been discovered by the boffins at Trend Micro. They culled through the apps that are in the Google Store and found at least 10 plankton-based apps. Plankton is a toolkit or type of stealthy...
I thought that's what whales ate.
I thought it was the villain in SpongeBob.
Plankton.
It's yeah. Both, actually.
So that brings up, I guess, an interesting problem there. There's hundreds of thousands of apps in that store.
Yeah.
It's really difficult to keep track of what's good and what's bad. A few years ago, in February, a few months ago, right, Google introduced a cloud-based scanner called Bouncer that is designed to secure the apps that are in their store It's sort of like a antivirus that they use to scan their apps, but just like any other application, it has to be kept up to date, and it's not 100% all of the time. So,
in all, the apps have been downloaded more than 700,000 times.
Wow.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go wipe my phone when I get home, because while I'm pretty sure I haven't downloaded any of these apps,
well, I did something that's a little untraditional for me anyway. I don't particularly care for antivirus software on devices that I feel aren't really a target, like my phone. I've never really had to have an antivirus program for my phone, but I downloaded and installed AVG for my phone, and I feel pretty confident that all the apps that I download, it does take about an extra second and a half while AVG scans the app right after I download it. Small price to pay to make sure I don't have one of these vulnerabilities on my phone.
Yeah.
Some of the apps that they list are like Make Your Home, Art of Tattoo, Thermo, and my personal favorite, Spyphone Pro,
it actually said it will track every text message, call, every location.
I know.
Doesn't sound like a bad idea.
Well, it's an app you put on your phone, and then you put the other part of the app on the other person's phone, like a cheating significant other.
Or a small child who maybe you want to keep tabs on.
Yeah, and you get to see all of their phone calls as a list of who they called. And yeah, except that app also contains plankton.
Bad news bears. Hey, man.
In case your phone is beached as.
Connect's pretty cool, right? It's not as cool as it could be.
Depends on who you ask. If you ask me, it's a webcam, and that they can like sense where you are.
I don't know, man. There's some pretty cool programs out.
If you ask me, it's a conspiracy.
It is. They're actually watching you.
The government's watching you through your Connect.
What was that? Was that Doctor Who, or was it Torchwood, where the set-top boxes, the cable boxes that were being given
out? Oh, yeah,
out.
That was Doctor Who, right? Yeah.
So, well,
they were watching, and then eventually they were like also subliminally programming to their minds and being controlled by a
which is just a beta
alien.
Test for the next version of the Xbox. Apparently, a report from The Verge says that a 4-gig Xbox 360 with a Kinect will be available next week with a subsidized price of $100.
That's not bad at all.
Now, there's a subscription model. You have to keep a $15 a month membership, which goes towards an Xbox Live Gold membership, for 2 years.
Not bad.
Yeah.
I might actually buy one, because I'd love to have an Xbox 360 as a media device on my TV.
Yeah.
Because it plays
Netflix.
All that stuff.
All that stuff, yeah. So The Verge says the subsidized console is going to be sold at Microsoft stores in the U.S. Not sure if it's going to be sold in other stores or online. But basically, it's $460. It's $100 for the Xbox 360 and $360 for 2 years of monthly subscriptions. I think a monthly subscription to the Xbox Live Gold is about $15 already, isn't it?
I believe so.
I don't know. I can't remember how much that is. But if you crunch the numbers, if you were to buy all of the parts of the bundle separately, it would come down to $470, $200 for the 4-gig Xbox 360, $150 for the Kinect. Okay, it's normally only $120 for 2 years of Xbox Live Gold.
Okay, you buy it by the big package.
So the subsidized bundle is $10 cheaper than if you bought it all separately. So actually, not a bad plan. They're not actually ripping people off with the subscription model. TiVo played with a subscription model, you know, the digital video recorders, and their subscription model actually was pretty unfair. It ended up costing you a pretty penny over the price of the TiVo if you just bought it outright. This is basically, they're just lending you their Xbox and you're just paying it back a bit at a time. The only issue I see with this is if the new version of the Xbox comes out within the next couple of years, you're going to be stuck. You can still have the old one. I mean, you could go get the new one, but, you know.
Well, I mean, that console has been around for a good bit.
It still wouldn't be a bad idea to have an Xbox 360, because with the 360, they chose to make a lot of the Xbox games not backwards compatible.
Right.
So, I mean, they may do that with the new Xbox as well.
Possible. And you could still use it as a Netflix set-top, you know, 2 years in another room. Very cool. You know, I can kind of get by. That's not a douchey move. I'm a little surprised.
I'm not. It's an old system.
Speaking of douchey surprises, what kind of stones does it take to release a game that sucks and then unrelease it? Is this shenanigans, or is this actually a good thing, Kyle?
It's real. I don't know if it's a good thing. I mean, I don't really care anymore, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
But Gearbox Software, they made Borderlands. They're making Borderlands 2.
Right.
They took over the Duke Nukem Forever.
Oh my gosh, title. Duke Nukem Forever, one of the most anticipated, least enjoyed games ever.
It was in development for 13 years at 3D Realms, and it was released under Gearbox Software's name because they took it over.
Okay.
Well,
this game sucked, Kyle.
It was pretty terrible.
The original Duke Nukem was great, but the Duke Nukem, this one, it was horrible.
The official statement from Gearbox is, "We released a game that was much better than what we got, but we can do better. To prove it, Duke Nukem Forever's release date will be pushed back again. We just need a little bit more time to make this game great."
So they are unreleasing the game.
Yeah.
Now, the question is, what are they going to do for all the people who purchased this now unreleased game?
I don't know.
If they give everybody who already bought the game a free copy of the game, I could see this as being a public relations coup. I mean, this could be a good thing. But, I mean, in an era of releasing half-done games and then fixing it with a patch or downloadable content that they try and make you pay for, it's pretty ballsy to unrelease a game. Chris, what do you think about this?
I mean, the game sucked.
It did. I mean, the best part of the demo was when you got to play with poop.
It's a recall, you know, but
a total recall.
What do you do? Like, Kyle, for the longest time, you had this, like, almost a placard that said, you know, a pre-release.
Yeah, you got your little,
copy
your little
of,
badge.
Like,
your little
Duke Nukem Forever.
Yeah,
we're going to frame it.
It was a pre-release thing that said Duke Nukem Forever is coming out, and you've got a pre-release code, so you can play the demo when it comes out.
And you had that for years.
Yeah, I did.
And, I mean, so there was a lot of hype. A lot of people, you know, churned out their cash for this game. I think the good thing to do would either be to offer a discount to the actual release, or since it's not necessarily, they're not coming out with a new version of the game, it's a re-release of the game.
They're probably going to start over from scratch. Because I mean,
it should.
And I think people who bought the game should get it for free.
I think so too.
And I'm not one of those people who's like, I want something, you know, for nothing. You invested money
and time,
faith and time in a product that was not. Not only was it not what you wanted, it's not even what the people who released the game wanted.
Right.
Granted, they did release the game, so I mean, they kind of had to know what was going to happen.
I mean, Gearbox makes good games.
They do. That's the thing. Borderlands 2 is supposed to be super awesome.
Borderlands was really good.
Borderlands was really fun.
Except for the very end, but I won't go into that.
Yeah, I never got to beat it, so whatever.
So,
how much time do we have?
We have time for this.
Oh, Chris, you're getting ready to say something.
It's always happened to me.
Yeah, well, it's cool. That's all for this segment of That Computer Show, but when we come back, streaming from thatcomputershow.net, Chris is going to get to say something. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Chris will talk words. Most of them will be English. You might even understand some of them. Stay tuned. We'll translate after the break. And we are back with the third segment of That Computer Show. Call us at 803-748-9293 to get in on the action. We'd like to hear from you. Now, I do just have to take a moment to say, if you don't know it already, influential rapper and Beastie Boy frontman Adam... How do you pronounce his last name?
Awesome.
Yawk. I just call him MCA. He died this week at the age of 47. He was only 47 after losing his battle with cancer. Cancer, you suck, and we all hate you. Just, that needs to be said. So, in memory of MCA, you can't, you won't, and you don't stop. Chris, back to you.
I just,
we're all sad. It's been all Beastie Boys.
It.
Yeah, I mean, it's been all Beastie Boys at the store today. And it will be. I've been, like, just crapping out quotes all afternoon. So what were you talking about before we went to the break? You got cut off by the break, breaking, for breakness.
For break
justice.
Oh, my
God, that's the funky.
Break it down.
I've got some news about the PlayStation 4.
Is that what the logo is going to look like?
No.
Okay.
And the successor to the 360. And it's just one of those, another irony or interesting twist in the...
What a twist!
The direction of consoles and software and hardware. The PlayStation, currently, the PlayStation 3 has a Cell processor jointly developed by IBM and Sony and Toshiba and the Beastie Boys. Well, it's going to get replaced with an AMD processor this time, and an x86 processor. That's the same kind of processor that's in a desktop or notebook computer.
Huh.
So it's also going to be backed up on the GPU side with an AMD Southern Islands class GPU.
Oh, yeah.
And these are all rumors, so it could be slightly different.
Rumors and speculation.
But these are pretty good solid rumors. The Xbox 360's replacement is also going to have an AMD GPU, probably a Southern Islands variant as well. So that's AMD's brand new 7000 series 28 nanometer awesomeness video hardware. So that's just interesting that they're not going to be using these esoteric, strange processors in the the PlayStation 4, but apparently the...
I'm so excited right now for three reasons.
What is this?
One, the PlayStation 4 is going to use an AMD platform. Two, the Xbox 720 or whatever the heck they're going to call it is using the AMD platform. And three, the Wii U is going to use the AMD video platform as well.
Now, the processor in the whatever comes after the 360 is going to be another PowerPC processor.
Right. But they're all three major platforms are using AMD for core components. Yep. I got a little just a little techno stiffy just now.
Well, NVIDIA has some really killer products on the market.
They
right
do.
Now.
They really do.
The GTX 680 is a killer card.
Didn't the 690 just launch?
Yeah, and it's taken the top spot as far as horsepower. But here's the big problem that with NVIDIA, as a company, they're jerks. A lot of developers and vendors and card manufacturers really don't like NVIDIA. So
it just makes me so happy.
They
Hercules.
And reviewers have a problem with NVIDIA. I mean, I read some reviews this morning for the GeForce GTX 680, which comes out in a couple of days. The 670 rather, that comes out in a couple of days. And the sneakiness that this review website, which is a very well respected review website, the stuff they had to go through just to get a pre-release copy to get some reviews, it was just terrible. And the conversation they had with the manufacturer that supplied the card, they were like, yeah, working with NVIDIA is like working with Satan himself.
Wow.
You know, you have to cut deals. You have to do what they say.
Yeah.
It is terrible, and we hate it. But, you know, they make a killer product.
They do.
So it's like selling your product at Walmart. You hate to do it, but you got it because, you know, they reach the market. Now, they had an interesting chart that I guess I hadn't really looked at before on this particular review site that is the power consumption chart for these video cards. And you know, we all know that the NVIDIA cards, the 400 series cards, could heat a small town.
Yeah, they could.
The new cards run a lot cooler, and if I can get my webpage to bring up the chart again.
Yeah, like the 600s they're cooler, faster,
stronger.
Yeah. Which I'm getting ready to put a 7870 in my machine. I will say that my 5850 warms my room. Between that and my 8120, my FX8120, my CPU, it gets pretty toasty in
there. The card that topped this chart as far as power consumption, though, is not an NVIDIA card.
Power consumption. Right.
The power consumption test, the 7970 tops it at pulling 1,000 watts.
It uses a lot of juice. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. These new 600s are super.
And that's power. Combined system power with a test bed that's using a pretty powerful processor.
That scares me.
But comparable to the 670, which was reviewed in this,
right?
That same system only pulled 400 watts of power. Now these are peak. This is at peak.
Wow.
So at peak 400. Now here's the thing that I'm not too keen on. Is it idle, the card still pulls 218 watts power.
The 7000?
The system pulls that with that video card. And that's still too much for a computer to pull. We need, as an industry, to work on getting our computers to not yank 200 watts of power out of the wall socket while we're just sitting there looking at pictures of cats on Reddit.
Yeah, because one of the things that I liked, it was an initiative on laptops, was it was this whole dual graphics chip thing, where you have a weak graphics chip to power your desktop, and I say weak, relatively weak, to power your desktop, to power, you know, Blu-ray playback, things like that. And then you use the gaming chip for the hard-hitting stuff.
The Southern Islands class AMD GPUs do employ that type of technology, as well as the next generation of the Fusion class processors, the A-series and the FM-series processors. They do shut down cores. They do go into a very low power mode. In fact, the video card, when your computer goes into a sleep state, the video card doesn't pull. I mean, it pulls like less than 2 watts of power.
Right.
So...
Wow. Real quick, and I want to cover this because we talked about this right at the show's intro. Windows 8, and we're keeping our eye on Windows 8 because it's probably going to be out at the end of the year. Windows 8 is not going to have support for DVDs or Blu-rays, and I think that Chris and I may have conflicting feelings on this.
Well, I have a slight conflict, yeah. Well, you know that the Mac platform doesn't play Blu-rays either.
By default.
Well, yeah, I think you have to buy another Blu-ray player, and you have to buy the software.
And neither
separate.
Does Windows 7.
So
Windows 7 doesn't come with a Blu-ray playback codec.
Yeah, and
I think it does have DVD though.
It does. Windows Vista and Windows 7 came with the ability to play DVD out of the box. It was the license was paid for by Microsoft and included in the price that you pay with the operating system.
I got an interesting quote here.
They took that out for Windows 8.
Right.
And their justification for it was, I mean, it's pretty solid.
It is.
The market for optical media, optical video playback, is dying. Thanks to the likes of Netflix.
And YouTube and Hulu.
Okay, Vimeo.
I want to read this quote real quick. On the PC, these online sources are growing much faster than DVD and broadcast TV consumption, which are in sharp decline, no matter how you measure, unique users, minutes, percentage of sources, etc. Globally, DVD sales have declined significantly year over year, and Blu-ray on PCs is losing momentum as well. Watching broadcast TV on PCs, while incredibly important for some of you, has also declined steadily. These traditional media playback scenarios, optical media and broadcast TV, require a specialized set of decoders and hardware that cost a significant amount in royalties. Now, I'd be curious to know what these amounts are. And maybe you could get the Windows 8, like, Blu-ray add-on pack. And I'm sure there's going to be some, you know, ways around this. VLC is one that you mentioned before the show.
Yeah.
But what do you think about this? I mean, Kyle, weigh in, man. You know,
I think I don't watch movies on my computer.
Oh, I do. That's my main view.
Do you watch DVDs on your computer?
I haven't stuck a DVD in my computer in ever.
I got a Blu-ray drive in my computer in the bedroom.
Do you use it to play Blu-rays?
No. But the one reason I'm buying Blu-rays right now, honestly, is I'm looking at this whole ultraviolet, you know, if you buy the Blu-ray, you can also get a digital copy to consume on any media platform you
want. Cool. Leslie and I have a ton of DVDs and Blu-rays.
Yeah.
And we watch a ton of movies on our DVD or our Blu-ray player.
What about on your computers?
No.
And here's the thing. And somebody at the store was like, oh, well, I can bring these with me on a trip. You can. You could bring your stack of 50 Blu-rays, or you could just download all those shows through like Amazon Video On Demand or
right,
something
exactly.
like that. Or God forbid, you know, if you want to break the law, people will just torrent entire seasons of shows.
And we have Netflix too. So like you said, if we're ever out of town or anything, we have laptops. We can just pull up Netflix.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think it's really going to affect me or a lot of people in any way, because people that want to watch DVDs and Blu-rays are probably going to have a DVD or Blu-ray player.
Also, yeah. PC manufacturers will fill in the gap, I'm certain.
With their own branded stuff. Yeah.
Even when, with Windows XP, Windows XP did not come with a DVD playback codec. But every manufacturer of your computer, Dell, HP, Compaq, eMachines, they installed the DVD codec for you and paid that license for you. In fact, even a lot of white box computers, the license would come with the DVD drive when you bought the drive.
CyberLink Power DVD or something like that.
It added like $1.50 or $2 to the price of the drive, but it's, you know, to pay MPEG and MLA. One of the ironic twists to not including these codecs
was a twist.
is that Microsoft is one of the biggest holders and stakeholders in these codecs.
Interesting.
So
that is ironic.
That's weird.
For example, them and Apple are huge players behind the H.264 codec,
right?
Which is licensed through MPEG-LA. They're big supporters and investors and owners.
An interesting aside to this, Microsoft is also planning to kill off its Windows Live brand. What they're going to do is they're going to consolidate it. You're just going to have a Microsoft account. Because, you know, you've got Xbox Live Gold, you've got Xbox Live Silver, you've got Xbox Live, like, Palladium and Copper, and you have Windows Live. You have Windows kind of Alive. Yeah, they're gonna consolidate them, get rid of them all, so it will be a Microsoft account, which does make sense because Windows 8 is supposed to have the ability to interact with your gaming console.
Well, that is a feature that I liked about the consumer preview is that I chose to go ahead and use my MSN login or my Windows Live login, which is confusing. It's an MSN login. It's my Windows Live login. Why aren't they together? And this, they will be. I use that login, and no matter which Windows 8 computer I logged into as myself, I got my own profile, and I had my stuff there.
Yeah, that was cool.
So
whether we like it or not, we're going cloud. Kicking and screaming.
How about games for Windows Live? Is that going away too? Is that going to just be one account?
It's going to go into your Microsoft account.
Because that thing is so annoying.
Yeah, the software itself,
yeah.
Nobody uses it. That was a failed experiment.
Wasn't there a new game that's coming out that everybody's excited about except for the fact it's using games for Windows Live?
I mean, we've seen that happen a lot. I don't know specifically what game you're talking about.
Yeah, me neither.
We talked about it about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
As a gaming center, we've run into that a lot. So, yeah, hopefully the Microsoft... Because, you know, there are going to be games that will work on my Windows 8 computer, and I can play against people... on their Xbox,
they've
whatever,
done that
whatever.
In the past with, for example, Shadowrun.
Oh, bad example. That game sucked rocks.
All right, it sucked, but it had the capability to do that.
If you had an Xbox Live Gold account.
Correct, yeah.
But yeah, so, I mean, I think convergence, man, we started the show with it. We're going to end the show with it. We need to make it easier, better, faster, stronger, you know, tastier, lower calories, sexier. I don't know. Just saying.
You don't know lower calories?
I do know.
Get
lower calories.
Get a fat-free low-cal
Xbox.
Yeah.
You know the new Xbox may not have an optical drive.
That doesn't surprise me.
So
wait, how are you going to get games then? Is it all going to be digital downloads for your games?
Yeah, it's cloudified all.
That's cool. But
as long as there's an offline mode,
that's not good for retail stores that sell games.
Yeah, but retail stores are going out, man. More games are bought on Steam and other online services than in physical stores at this point, which is bad news if you work at one of those stores. Well, look at the trouble Best Buy's in.
Right.
And it's half because the software department used to be like a third of the computer section. Now it's...
Nobody's buying CDs and DVDs.
Yeah, it's
because
killing
them. I can get iTunes and Amazon Unbox.
Man, I still buy CDs for bands.
I usually buy the MP3s direct from their website if I can because they get more money for it.
Glitch Mob.
Glitch Mob. Amen. Yeah. Well, that's all the time we've got for this week's That Computer Show. Good show, guys. We're going to be back next week with more of That Computer Show, Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Hit us up during the week at thatcomputershow.net to get downloads, blog posts, past episodes, and more. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Look us up at TCSJoe. And follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/thatcomputerstore. Remember, if you're not our Facebook friend...
You're just bad, man.
Not a good person.
Just be our friend. Bad listener.
So be one of the cool kids. Check us out on Facebook. Until next week, this is Steven.
This is Chris.
And this is Kyle.
And you've been listening to
That Computer Show.